Welcome to Faith Football Friends. I'm Chris Elrod, here with the great Forrest Animaceris and the Smithville legend, Cole Parsley. We are excited to be with you today. We're going to be talking about 1 Corinthians 13, which is the love chapter of the Bible, or that's how it is known. And so we're just going to be kind of talking about why love is so important. Cole, what you got for us?
All right, so the reason love is so important, really the easy answer to that is because Jesus breaks down the two greatest commandments. He was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And he said, love God. And then he says, love your neighbor. And so in order to do that, in order to follow Jesus's command or God's command for us, we got to actually define what is love. And 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is actually a chapter which defines love for us. It's a lot like Hebrews chapter 11, the Faith Hall of Fame, where faith is defined there.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation there. It is, in a lot of ways, a definition of love, and it's kind of an extended definition and kind of almost like a job description of love. If you love me, you will do these things. You know, it talks about how love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy, is not boastful, is not arrogant, is not rude, is not self-seeking. And it kind of goes on and on and on for several verses. Forrest, why don't you speak to us about the context of this chapter and kind of help us understand what's going on in the Corinthian church and why Paul is addressing love.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, when you read the first three chapters of 1 Corinthians, he's really... A lot of lingo is coming to my head. He's really ripping them up, you know, because he calls them fleshly minded. He calls them pretty much immature spiritually. And the reason why is because they were so divided. And part of the reason they were so divided is because they were fighting over spiritual gifts. Which spiritual gift was better than the other one? Which one should have the main stage? All this other stuff. And Paul's whole point that he's getting to, especially chapters 13 and 14, is that spiritual gifts are absolutely meaningless without love. So in the name of spiritual gifts, they were deserting love, turning their backs on each other, you know, treating each other poorly. You see that really in every chapter. Think about in chapter 11, when they're coming together for the Lord's Supper, and they're coming together for a meal, and all the rich people are eating and drinking, and all the poor people have nothing. Like, that's the exact opposite of love. So Paul just tells them, look, this is what's up. I can speak in tongues. Without love, it's nothing. I can prophesy, verse 2. Without love, it's nothing. I can be a martyr, verse 3. Without love, it's nothing. And then he gets into what love really is and how that's something the Corinthian church, and I think if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of us too, unfortunately miss a lot of the times.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, the Corinthian church, I think, was definitely deprived of love, and they were just kind of hungry for that, or needed a reminder of how they were to love, and Paul just lays it out for them. You know, look, this is what's most important. It doesn't matter what you are able to do or what gifts you have. If you don't love, it's no good, no good at all. So, Cole, how do you think we can apply this to our life today? I think there's several ways, but just kind of talk about some of the ways that we can apply this.
I think, first of all, when we talk about love today, I'm actually reading a Star Wars book. For those who listen to our friends portion, you know that I love Star Wars, and I've had an obsession with reading the books. And right now, there's this love interest going on, and the two people are talking about the feelings they're experiencing, but nobody's calling it what it is. It's this mysterious feeling that, you know, a Jedi is not supposed to be in love, but he's feeling something, and he doesn't know what it is, and we're all guessing, oh, that's love. Well, that's how we describe love. That's not necessarily how the Bible describes love. I think of such examples that people say as, how could a loving God send people to hell? Well, what kind of love are we talking about here? How are you defining love? It's something that I think most often is associated with romantic love, or we define love as something in which we have feelings, something that we feel. I know for me growing up, when I heard, you know, love God and love your neighbor, how important that is, that we're supposed to do that as Christians, I always just left it as, oh, I gotta always have a warm feeling in my heart towards other people. And the Bible, I think what we're going to study today shows us is that means nothing. That's not love. That's not biblical love at all. In fact, I can love my neighbor without even feeling a tingling feeling in my chest.
I think that's a really great point, because we do put such a strong emphasis on that feeling of love. But love is so much more than that. And, you know, love is a choice. And I feel like 1 Corinthians 13 really helps drive that point home, because it's saying, look, love is taking all these actions and applying them to the person that you quote unquote love. You know, if I love you, then I'm going to be patient toward you. You know, I'm going to choose to be patient toward you because I have chosen to love you. And so I think it speaks to the fact that love is a choice, but then I think it also speaks to the fact that love is a commitment, you know, and that we have to continually, intentionally focus on being committed to the people that we love, to show them the actions that we're supposed to show them. So, Forrest, what about this passage at weddings? Do you use this passage at weddings or no?
I would, but...
So you're okay with taking passages out of context?
No. Are you supposed to love your wife?
Oh.
No, you're absolutely supposed to love your wife.
Okay, so it's not really out of context, but... Speaking to what you're... The kind of joke you're making, you're actually making a good point. We think, like, this is limited to husbands and wives, but it's totally not. This is every single Christian is to have this for, really, when you look at the Bible, everybody, which is crazy to think about. You know, the Bible says to love your neighbor. Bible says to love your brother or sister in Christ. The Bible says to love your enemy. I mean, that really excludes pretty much everybody. And I think that that's when it really comes home. You know, this isn't just something I have for the girl who I think is the most beautiful woman in the world, who I vowed to spend the rest of my life with. Like, the dude at church who bothers me the most, I'm supposed to have this for him. Like, that's the thing I think we forget. This is, like, universal for the Christian, and not just at weddings, etc. But be that as it may, if requested to read it, I will.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point. And, like, you know, hopefully the person that you marry or the person that you are marrying as the affiliator of the wedding, you know, hopefully they're both Christians. And, you know, hopefully... And even if they're not, as you said, you know, we're supposed to love everyone. And so hopefully, you know, this passage is relevant to them as brothers and sisters in Christ, but then also just as humans, because we are supposed to love everyone. But I think it's definitely not the point that Paul is trying to drive home. I think the point that Paul is trying to drive home is that we're supposed to love everyone. We're supposed to show this love to everyone, especially those that we are brothers and sisters with in Christ. And so I was just kind of giving you a hard time to drive home that point, you know, that because oftentimes that is how, you know, we first think of this passage.
Yeah, that's true. But also this is, I mean, a relationship maker or breaker. If you don't live out 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 in your marriage is not going to succeed. There's no two ways about it, you know?
Absolutely.
So I don't mind it. Like, saying, I don't mind it in that context, as long as you're not saying, that's what Paul had in mind when he wrote this down.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great advice. I mean, it's great scripture, you know, and it should be binding in our lives, in our marriages, as long as we recognize, hey, that's not the original context. You know, that's not what Paul's, that's, couples is not who Paul is writing to. You know, and as long as we understand that, I think it is great to use in this context. But I'll tell you what, this passage is hard for me to apply with my relationship to my soon-to-be wife. But even as it's difficult to sometimes apply in that relationship, it's even more difficult for me to apply it to that person you mentioned at church that gets on my nerves. You know, those people who kind of get under our skin and that annoy us, that's who it's especially difficult to apply this to, this type of love to, but yet it's the exact type of person we're supposed to apply it to. So I thought that was a really great point and something that we definitely need to remember.
Yeah, I think specifically, I mean, we could go through here and name all these different words that Paul says that love is and define them. But what really comes to mind for me, and that I come back to time and time again, is love believes all things. And what that means is love believes the other person. Love believes the best in other people. I'm going to give us a quick practical reality of this. Do we believe that our president or political figures on either side have the best interest for us, right? Love hopes all things. Same thing. Do we hope that they have our best
interests
in mind? Thank you, Forrest.
No, I think you made a great point. And for those that might be following along with the Bible, and if you're listening to this with a car, you can check out 1 Corinthians 13 later. But verse 7 is what Cole is really focusing on. And it reads, it bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And it is talking about love. And so the one that really jumped out at me is kind of the one you didn't mention, Cole, and that's bears all things. You know, we never think of Galatians 6 and, you know, bearing one another's burdens. It's so easy for me to kind of just sometimes ignore burdens. But if I truly love you, and if I'm loving you like God says I should love you in 1 Corinthians 13, that means when you're hurting, I'm hurting. You know, whenever you're going through a hard time, I'm recognizing that and kind of, you know, going through that with you, whether, you know, I'm going with that through you in a close manner or kind of from afar, you know, I am mindful of that situation and aware of how difficult it is. And it's so easy for us just to like get caught up in our own world and get caught up in our own like life that, a lot of times we kind of can ignore the problems of our brothers and sisters in Christ, and we need to be aware of that.
Yeah, the thing, I think part of what this is saying, like you were saying, Chris, is love never says, this is too messy for me to get involved with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of times that's something we think, like, oh man, this guy's got some problems, you know, or this person, there's nothing. I mean, sorry, dude, you're on your own. And love, you know, love never tosses up its hands and says, sorry, there's nothing I can do. Love is there to help and to seek those opportunities.
Absolutely. That reminded me of this song. I don't remember who sings it. I thought it was Brad Paisley for the longest time, but it's not. You find out who your friends are. That song. Mm-hmm. Cole, I think you probably know it because you listen to country music. Forrest doesn't because he's deprived. And you find out who your friends are, though. You know, there's, like, the line that says, or, like, maybe it's the chorus.
Can you sing that for us?
No, I cannot sing it, but I think I can quote it. Okay. They'll get there fast, drop everything, never stop to think what's in it to me. What's in it for me? This is way too far. You know, like, those type of people are the people that Christians are called to be. You know, the people who will drop everything. You know, go whichever distance to be there for you so that they can comfort you, so that they can support you, or so that we can support the people who are hurting, you know. And I think that's difficult for us to do, but I think it's ever so important, especially in the world today and all that's going on, all the craziness and everything. You know, we need to be these type of people who will bear all things for all people.
Yeah, and I was just going to say real quick, I think verse 5 is the one that's most difficult in relationships, whether that be a marriage, whatever it may be. Love is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not irritable, and it does not keep a record of wrongs. And that's the one where I think, just from personal experience, is the hardest to live out in a marriage, because everybody has little things they do that annoy you, and love is not irritable. People are going to do things that you can easily hold against them, but love keeps no record of wrongs. There's going to be times, you know, when you want one thing and then a person in your relationship wants something else. Love is not self-seeking. So, like, that's the one for me. That's, like, where the rubber really meets the road. And really any relationship, you know, whether it's friendship, marriage, whatever. If I love somebody, you know, it really takes us down a notch, sort of. It's a really humbling thing, I think, Not saying I've perfected it. I definitely haven't. But when you read this verse often, you know, you're like, man, got some work to do.
Love does not insist on going to a restaurant when your wife wants to go on another or to another restaurant.
That's true. It does not insist on its own way.
Yeah.
What are the odds your wife wants to go somewhere, though? That's the thing.
What do you mean?
In my experience, where do you want to go? I don't know.
Well, nowhere right now. It's the corona.
No way.
Dude, my wife.
He's saying, though.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
My wife always wants to eat Kilgore's. So I just say Kilgore's every time, and we're good to go. Y'all ate there.
I did eat there.
I did, too.
Well, I don't want to roast them. They're great. The food was fantastic. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Thank you for resisting to roast another small business in a small country town in Middle Tennessee. I really appreciate that.
I'm sure they're doing fine, dude. They're like the only restaurant within, 50 miles?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, dude. Everybody loves Kilgore's. My wife works at Kilgore's. Okay.
Does she really?
What else are you trying to say? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
Mail me some of that fried chicken, man. Those chicken tenders.
I just had some chicken tenders today. Getting back on point. If you're listening to this, and I know for me, I'm very thankful that this exists. I'm very thankful that we serve a God who loves us and calls us to love. Because if you look at the opposite of all these traits of what love is, that is not a person I want to be around. And it's specifically, that's not a community I want to be in. Love is patient. What's the opposite of patient? Well, not being patient. What's the opposite of kindness? Love is patient. Love is kind. What's the opposite of kindness? Well, someone being rude. Love is not arrogant. Do you want to be around people who are arrogant? We often look at haughtiness and we don't like it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, though, Cole. You know, like any kind of love that we try to make in our own image or matching, you know, the way that we think love should be is not going to be near as good because love is going to be self-seeking every time. You know, like if I define love the way that I want it to be defined, like it's going to have my best interests at heart. You know what I mean? Like its core is going to be my interest. And so we could use that love though, that we try to define to our own interest or our own benefit to kind of manipulate people, you know, like, oh, well, if you love me, you'll do that. But that's not the love that God describes in his word. That's not the love that we're to have as Christians. You know, our love is supposed to be a love of service. You know, I truly believe that if the church loved the way that we were supposed to love, we would serve the way that we were supposed to serve. And if we served the way that we were supposed to serve, the church would grow. It would be a lot bigger, you know? And so I think, you know, just striving to be the best at just loving others that we can be personally will make a huge difference in God's kingdom.
Yeah, I want to add to that. Think about everything God blesses us with. When we distort it, that's when it becomes sin. And I'm thinking about idolatry. Well, what's wrong with idolatry? It's loving something in an unhealthy manner. It's okay to love people as much as you want to love God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, but it's not okay to love money, right? And so further that, that's not saying have a good feeling for money. What that means is don't love money in the sense that you serve money, that everything you do is for money or with greed in mind.
No, that's a great point, Cole. You know, I think we definitely have to be aware of what we love and how we are serving others and how we are serving those that we love. I remember being kind of taught this little, illustration concerning this passage. You know, because we all know that we're supposed to imitate God, Ephesians 5, verse 1. And then we also know that we're supposed to we also know that God is love and we're supposed to imitate God. And so we ourselves are supposed to be love to the best of our ability, you know? And so I've been taught before to go through this passage and instead of saying the word love to insert your name. And so whenever you go through it and you start in verse 4, Chris is patient. Chris is kind. Chris does not envy, is not boastful, is not arrogant, is not rude, is not self-seeking, is not irritable, does not keep a record of wrongs. Chris finds no joy in unrighteousness, but rejoices in the truth. He bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And Chris never ends. And like, as you read that, like, and replace your name in there for love, you're like, yeah, I'm not doing all that I need to be doing. Like, I'm not doing all of this. Like, I can't truthfully say any of those things. You know, and it kind of helps us kind of gauge where we are and how we are doing as a Christian in regards to love, you know?
Yeah, I think that's powerful. What a champ, you know? Imagine this being your description of who you are. Like, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
you just described Jesus.
Yeah.
No, so that's so who true. Jesus is.
Yeah. That's exactly true. But going back to what you said about being like a description, like what if that is what was written on your tombstone?
Right.
You know? Like where everyone that walked past for the rest of.
So David was a man after God's own heart, right? That would be written, that is written on his tombstone, you know, symbolically speaking, air quotation marks. In the same way that we might want that, I want to die and people say he was a man after God's own heart. Like, I want that. It would be awesome if this was the description, though this is, wow. But the two are the same, right? Because to be after God's very own heart means you're going to also follow this. This is how you do that.
Yeah.
And though David had his mistakes, you do see that throughout his life, like in his interactions with Saul, when he has all these chances to kill Saul and he never does. And then with how he treats people who have wronged him once he's king, how he doesn't seek revenge and stuff like that, you know, though he's definitely sinned like everybody else. There's, you know, there's some truth to that, and that he did live this out.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so great that we serve a God who is all these things, you know, that is patient with us, that is kind, you know, that is not self-seeking and does not keep a record of our wrongdoings. And, you know, we could go on and on as we list the descriptions of love. You know, they are certainly descriptions of God, and I think we are all very thankful and very blessed by that. I've enjoyed our discussion of 1 Corinthians 13, and we hope that you have enjoyed it as well, and that you'll stick around and listen to the rest of the podcast. So it's time for the football portion of Faith Football Friends. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about football, but I did have one question for Forrest. There was a huge popularity in the world of Facebook right now with these tier making. Is that what they're called? The tier makers? And Forrest made a tier for all NFL quarterbacks and posted this on Facebook.
Yeah.
And my concern was with the placement of a few of those characters, namely Fitzmagic. Right. Namely,
I'll pull it up. I'll pull it up. I'll read what I got briefly.
Briefly.
So I'll start from the bottom, work my way up. And this is from tiermaker.com if you want to make your own. So on below average, we've got Mitch Trubisky. We've got Andy Dalton. We've got Mariota. Sorry. We've got Case Keenum. We've got Sam Darnold, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston. We've got Carr, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, Cam Newton, given what's been going on. Drew Locke, my own quarterback. Also, Cardale Jones and Alex Smith. On unknown, I've got Kyler Murray, just because we don't know yet. On average, I've got Captain Kirk, Deshaun Watson, Tannehill, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Eli Manning. You got Nick Foles, Matt Ryan, Garoppolo.
Tannehill is on the same tier as Eli Manning. I just can't.
Yeah, the two-time Super Bowl MVP. Yeah, that Eli Manning. Anyway, Garoppolo and above average, you got Big Ben, Lamar Jackson, Andrew Luck. You've got Aaron Rodgers, Philip Rivers, Carson Wentz, and then borderline elite. You've got Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, and then Elite, all by himself. You've got the man, the myth, the legend, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
It's because he is a myth. The elite Ryan Fitzpatrick is a myth. You're right. Dude, you're right about that.
Ryan Fitzpatrick will forever have my respect. This dude every day, every Sunday morning, goes out and he chops trees down in his backyard, and then he puts his football pads on and he goes out and he goes to war. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick does.
And he does it all with, like, the old school chin strap that only has two straps, you know, that doesn't even protect you.
Yeah.
Like, it has a massive beard.
Oh, man.
Dude, he doesn't care. Like, he will run into danger. He defensive lineman coming after him?
Oh,
he doesn't care.
He puts his life on the line. Go to YouTube, bro. Seriously.
He puts his head down, dude.
He doesn't care. That's why he's elite. Man.
He is an elite backup. I'll give you
No quarterback has beaten Tom Brady and the Patriots more than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is a head coach who has, and that's Mike Vrabel. 2-0 against the New England 100%. Patriots.
That's pretty good. That is pretty good. Small sample size, but it's pretty good.
Right. Yeah. It's like Ryan Fitzpatrick has very likely beaten him more times, but maybe not a higher percentage.
He's beaten him with every team in the Patriots division. He beat the Patriots as the Dolphins quarterback. He beat the Patriots as the Jets quarterback. He beat the Patriots as the Buffalo Bills quarterback.
He just don't care. He doesn't care.
That's, I mean,
no intimidation.
And if winning's more important than stats, how could I put Tom Brady above him?
Well, overall record, of course.
Right. not beating one person.
So head-to-head contest doesn't matter. Head-to-head contest doesn't matter.
No.
So the Super Bowl really should be like a best out of seven.
I'd be okay with that, but no.
I would be cool with it.
Absolutely not.
That would be fun. Can you imagine that? Or even like a best out of three.
It would be exhausting. It would take – I mean, it would take 3 weeks, but still like
– No, it would need to take 6 weeks.
It takes some of the
– each one.
It takes some of the power out of the game, though. Like,
right, you would.
The game doesn't mean as much.
You'd have to give less energy, the first couple.
But even from a fan perspective,
right?
Like, yeah. Oh, we lost this first Super Bowl. We got two more chances. It's just not as.
Well, no, you didn't lose the first Super Bowl. You just lost the first game. It'd be like the World Series.
Yeah.
It's exciting in basketball and baseball.
Yeah.
But those are different games.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't do it. Yeah.
Here's what I think would be interesting. I think the play calling and how that would change. Because, like, obviously, you wouldn't start. You would have a different playbook for every game. You know, like, you would have to, nearly. So, that's
what
I think would be interesting.
Chris, on my quarterback tier, what bothers you the most? I know there was something you were going to point out.
Okay, like, the Fitzpatrick thing, because I know and thoroughly believe that to be a joke. I can overlook that. I'm interested in why Aaron Rodgers is just above average and he's not elite or borderline elite, but yet Patrick Mahomes is elite.
They're not even in the same league, dude.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Mahomes, back-to-back in his first two seasons, MVP and Super Bowl MVP, champ. Like, that's insane. Aaron Rodgers, this is really what it came down to. When I was filling this thing out, and when I got to Aaron Rodgers, you know what came into my memory?
No, I don't. Never been there before.
Game against the San Francisco 49ers, just this past playoffs.
Yeah.
Where he did pretty much nothing.
Aaron Rodgers is eye candy. And what I mean by that is, let me explain. What I mean by that is all the commentators just talk about how good he is, this and that. But I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in his career. I'm sorry. He's just eye candy. He hasn't done anything.
And if I put Big Ben at above average, I can't make Aaron Rodgers better than Big Ben. I can't.
Oh, really? Okay. I don't know about all that.
Just when you look at his record, when you look at his stats, like –
This is what bothered me about it. Okay, Forrest? This is what bothered me.
I'm ready.
Let's get real. This is. I'm confronting you right now. I'm asking you to repent. I'm asking you to turn away from your evil ways. Why are you putting Tom Brady on the same tier with like three other quarterbacks? Because we all know he deserves a tier by himself. The only man to break the Madden curse except Patrick Mahomes. Okay, put Patrick Mahomes up there if you want. Fine.
Patrick Mahomes may not have beaten it yet.
Yeah, we don't know. Anyways.
That's true.
Tom Brady deserves a tier all by himself.
No.
Come okay, on, here's man. The thing.
You know I wasn't feeling this out. I wasn't feeling this out all time. This is all time greats. I'm saying recently.
Right.
Right. So like, okay. am I gonna put up 43-year-old Tom Brady
right.
against 25-year-old Pat Mahomes?
Okay. The fact that he's as high as he is good then.
Yeah.
Define recently though, because if it's so recent that Tom Brady is lucky to be put where he is.
Oh, then Tannehill.
Then Ryan Tannehill should probably be above average as well.
Yeah. No, Tannehill should be elite, son.
There's a bad taste in my mouth from the playoffs. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers. I'm sorry. And you even said on this podcast, Cole, that they were daring the Titans to throw it against the Chiefs. And he just didn't. He couldn't get it done.
If that is true, why is Lamar Miller so high? Not Lamar. Lamar Jackson so high on the list.
He was a one-man show in the playoffs. He had over 300 yards just by himself.
That's true.
Against a stout Titans defense.
He didn't look good, though.
Because his whole team was imploding.
Oh, no, don't give him excuses now.
Dude, are you telling me he's not above average?
No,
there's nothing about him that's average.
He definitely is. He definitely is. I'm just attacking the recency. I'm trolling you, okay?
No, I know. I'm just defending it. This is fun. This is the fun of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say, Tannehill and Rodgers really gave me the most difficulty.
Cole, just thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know.
But this is what we should do. This is what we should do. You guys should both fill out one. And we'll post all three of ours on our Facebook. So the listeners, go to Facebook, look at... And I'll make a real one. Maybe I won't. I don't know. I'll probably just keep this one. And you can just look at our three tiered quarterback tiers, and then we'll share it, and then we expect you guys to put yours in the comments, and the debate can continue.
It's this previous season, though. That's the sample size. Not career, right? This previous season.
It's really hard to isolate it. I don't know. It's really hard to isolate it.
Because we got to define that, bro. Like.
I think
last 3 years, maybe? That's five.
Last 3 years is too far, I think. I think last season. That's fresh on everybody's mind, like.
Or how do you feel about them going into this season?
Going into next season. Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like you're a GM or something.
Yeah.
How do you rank it?
Okay.
Okay, I can do that.
That's interesting. I'm excited. That's interesting. Okay.
And so listeners, you join in as well. If we want to hear from you.
We'll share ours please. And post the link.
When we post the link?
We'll share ours and post the link to where you can make your own.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, gotcha. I was confused. All right, my next question was, Kyle Murray, you're just unsure about him? Because he played all last season, didn't he?
Yeah. I really don't know how I feel about it. I mean, he played on a trash team and did with a new head coach who's, like, barely older than we are. And he did pretty good, but I don't know.
Yeah,
unproven. That's the way I looked at that. Unproven. I don't know.
Unproven.
I would take him over everybody under him and even a couple of guys above him, honestly.
Who are the guys above him? I've got my view.
I would take him over Goff.
Okay.
Jared Goff. I would take him over Matthew Stafford at this point.
Okay.
I would take him over... Given Eli's age and everything, I'd take him over Eli.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's probably it.
I would probably even take him over Matt Ryan, just because I know he's getting old, or older at least. All right, now my last one that I want to know about, Carson Wentz, above average?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been a letdown lately.
When he's not injured, he blows your socks off, dude. I'm telling you.
Nah, bro. Like, they should have kept Nick Foles.
Yeah.
No. No.
Yes, absolutely, man.
Nick Foles had that great season. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. Had the great season, got paid, deconstructed, can't do anything.
Nick Foles is like Ryan Tannehill, right? Ryan Tannehill, no matter where he goes, he's going to be trash unless he's with the Titans. The Titans, no matter what quarterback they have, they're going to be trash unless they have Tannehill. That is Nick Foles with the Eagles. Wherever he goes, he's not going to succeed unless he's with the Eagles.
And that ship has sailed.
The Eagles are not going to be good unless they have Nick Foles. Carson Wentz isn't getting it done.
I agree with that, I think.
I'm just saying he's often not healthy. Yeah, every season he's been in the league, he's missed games, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to count that against him. That's like saying Mariota's trash because he's always hurt. That's not fair to him.
I mean...
But it's the name of the game, man.
You've got to be healthy.
And if that's a variable that I'm supposed to take into filling out this tier maker in the thoughts of next season, that's something I've got to definitely take into consideration.
Yeah, I just think as a quarterback, he's above average.
No, it's fine. I would agree with that. He is above average. He's not average. He's not an average quarterback. He's a little above average.
There you go.
No problem there.
Just agree to disagree.
He's not my
last one. I said that was my last one. Oh, sorry, Cole. Sorry. I said that was my last one. But actually, Andrew Luck, above average, he's retired. Yeah. Crying out loud.
I don't know, if he's on the list, what am I going to do? Put him at the bottom just because he doesn't play anymore?
Yeah.
If he's like, you don't choose which quarterbacks are on the option. You just click and drag from a pool of them.
Listen, let me tell you.
That's helpful.
We forced him into retirement. He couldn't take any more sacks.
Granted that he's playing because he's in the pool of options, he is above average.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. That's
physically, skill-wise, intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. He's got a weird shaped head, but that's all right.
And a bizarre voice.
And he doesn't have a cell phone.
Or he has good a flip for him. Honestly, good for real? Him.
He used to have a flip phone, but I don't know about
just
this
because
year.
He wouldn't give you his number doesn't mean he doesn't have a cell phone call.
Oh, okay.
Hey, all right. I guess we're kind of shifting into our friends portion of the podcast now. We're going to pause for a little moment of music, and then we're gonna shift. All right, so how is Corona impacting your lives currently? Has it changed since the last time that we talked about the coronavirus?
I am officially stuck in my house full time. I'm going crazy. I'm a bit of a homebody, but I have cabin fever, man. I need to go work out. I need to get out. I need to go to the grocery store just to breathe the air. Once somebody tells me I can't do something, then I want to do it.
Yeah.
Rebellious. What about you, Forrest?
It's really a tale of two cities at my house. I'm struggling just because, you know, I'm kind of an extrovert. I like going outdoors and stuff sometimes. Lori is thriving. She's on top of the world right now.
Really?
Yeah. Why? I mean, she's just, this is just, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, it's not perfect, obviously, but she's just been killing it. I mean, stuff around the house, stuff she's been wanting to do for a while and just hadn't done yet. She's knocking it all out. She's up on her schoolwork, ahead on her schoolwork, you know, just really making the best use of the time. Unlike me. But now that we're like 10 plus days in, I am starting to catch up and I am starting to be a little bit more productive.
Gotcha. Yeah. I am busier. I'm still going into the office. And so like, I feel just swamped. Like this has definitely been like the busiest weeks of my youth ministry career for this first year and a month. So, it's been interesting.
I feel like the church is almost like, and I'm really not trying to sound critical because I'm not. I think God is doing awesome things in a time like this, but some churches are almost like overcompensating for the whole corona thing. Like we're now, some churches are doing more than they were doing before coronavirus hit, which like I guess you can justify it. You know, people need more encouragement, whatever. But at the same time, like I feel like some people probably feel like almost bombarded and just like stretched thin, you know, but I could be wrong. I know some ministers feel that way, but that might just be the nature of the beast.
I definitely think ministers feel that way. I don't know that as many members and just, you know, like people feel that way, you know. Not that like ministers are better or not to elevate them or anything, but just like the workload is different for us right now, you know. And so I think that is difficult, but I think you're right. Like, I've had to kind of remind myself, like, okay, just because everyone's at home does not mean it's my responsibility to entertain them, you know. Right. Like, because like, yeah. My difficulty was at first, it was like, man, all these people are bored. Like, they're bored out of their minds. I've got to give them something to do. And it's like, no, that's not my job at all. You know? And so, because they're going to find ways to occupy their time. Like, we are really good at that. We don't remember what it's like to be bored. Like, really. Like,
right. No.
We've not been born since we were probably six. Like, it's just crazy to think about how much we have to do. And I'm honestly thankful that this has been an opportunity for us to slow down. And I'm hoping that, you know, families are able to spend more time together and stuff like that. And so I definitely understand what you're saying, Forrest, about us, you know, maybe overcompensating. At the same time, I feel like a lot of the things done are very non-intrusive things, because they're things that people have to do in their home, like watch a video or...
It's totally, you know, optional.
Exactly. They're totally optional. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is going to last for about 30 minutes at the most. And I can give my 30 minutes to this. And then I can go about the rest of my day. You know, like,
right.
Because it's so less intrusive time-wise, because it's literally like you turn on your phone, you turn on your computer, boom, it's there. Like, it's way less time-consuming and very freeing because of that.
Yeah. And I will say this, too. It's good that... And I'm going to say churches. Obviously, I'm not saying every church did this, but just from my reference point, churches putting out a lot of stuff at the beginning of this is good, rather than people getting used to not doing anything church-related and then being bombarded with stuff and, like, it's hard to adjust. Now, people are like, if you like, at least a lot of churches I know can't even do anymore. But, like, if they went less, that would be more of a shock than doing more. Like, people aren't going to be like, why are we doing so much, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's been an eye-opener in terms of tradition. Like, I think for the first time in a long time, we've recognized that we can worship anywhere. It doesn't have to be a church building. Like, that's just a building. That's all that is. And so maybe men are stepping up and leading their family in worship. You know that's happening.
Yeah. And this really could be, this could be like the fire that burns off the dross of, like, holding too tightly to some traditions.
Yes.
Because, like, traditions are only stay when they're convenient. And then when you realize, oh, snap, this isn't absolutely necessary, they start to go away.
Yeah. I think it's been huge in that realm. Just that whole idea.
And it brought a lot of churches into the 21st century for the first time. Like, now you have to know how to work a computer. You got to know how to, you know what I mean? Obviously, not every church, but.
Which is great, because that's giving people with a whole new skill set to use their skills for the church. You know, and like,
yeah,
that's huge, because I feel like in a lot of places those people were getting neglected or not used to their full potential. And it's like, all right, you can edit a video. Okay, perfect. Here you go.
Right.
Like, take care of this for me, you know?
And it works on the inside and outside. Not only are you getting more people involved, but you're, I think, reaching people you otherwise wouldn't with stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's huge. I think that's so huge. And I'm hoping that it will kind of help us see that if we do some of this non-intrusive stuff, like, I say non-intrusive in the world of time, like not taking everyone's time completely, that hopefully they will be able to take this post-corona and use that there to continue to get the gospel out in these ways, because people appreciate having, you know, I feel like people will appreciate having, like, you know, a little 2-minute devotional, a little 5-minute devotional that they can do. And maybe this will help with the problem of biblical illiteracy that we've been facing for the past, you know, decade.
For sure.
100 years, however long it's been going on.
Yeah, and it's really strengthened my ministry. Like, I did something today that I wanted to for a while and never did. And the coronavirus kind of gave me the opportunity. Like, I just sat down with the directory and called every person who was, like, single or over a certain age. And it took, you know, it only took me, like, an hour and a half. But it was, like, one of the most rewarding things I've done in a while. And if it wasn't for coronavirus, I never would have done that, even though I should.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll say, I feel like, here's an example. We've all talked about how worshiping with our family and at home has brought some good fruit. And we know that that's happening in a lot of places. Now, churches will be more open to such things and ideas as, okay, it's Sunday night. What if we split off and we had a worship in a member's house? Sunday night worship, we did it at a member's house with food, games after, whatever you want to call it. Before, that would have been in a lot of places like forbidden. We can't do that. We worship at the church building. Now going forward, it could be something we're more open to in various places.
Yeah, I think it has the opportunity to create a more like organic Christianity and also break down the whole like clergy lady divide that we try to avoid but is still there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like Cole, like let's say you're not a preacher, but now you're leading your family in worship. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're just being a man. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
There's no 13. Right. They're not taking a collection to pay you or anything. You're just stepping up, which I think is cool.
Right.
I used to think like a child. Now I'm leading my family in worship and I became a man. Paraphrasing 1 Corinthians 13, of course. Commentary a little bit.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I know we've got about out of time and need to be wrapping up, but I just want to give you all an opportunity and myself an opportunity to talk about some of the other content that we're all in the process of producing on a regular basis. I know Forrest works with several different venues of information, and Cole has a YouTube channel, and I've got a resource as well. So, Cole, why don't you talk a little bit about your YouTube channel? Just give us a small synopsis and, like, tell us the name of it, where we can find you, etc.
Okay, so the YouTube channel is Limitless Faith. Okay, so you just type in Limitless Faith in the search bar, and I think we're the second one down. There's also a band, a Christian band called Limitless Faith. But we got, like, 50 videos. Maybe 30 videos, 30 to 50 videos. It's me and my wife, Lauren. We both do the channel, mostly me these days, but she comes in every now and again. And most of it's Christian teachings, and it's heavily edited. I try and make it pretty entertaining and easy to watch, with also some Bible material. And then we also just goof around. We've pranked each other on the channel. And so we're hoping that grows. Check it out. Give us a subscription. Subscribe, and you'll get to know me and my wife and just our life a lot better.
Yeah, awesome. What about you, Forrest? I know you have several different venues of information that you're putting out. A lot of it has to do with apologetics and stuff. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, got a lot of irons in the fire, unfortunately. Or fortunately, not sure.
Fortunately. Fortunate yeah, for so us, unfortunate for Lori.
Yeah. You can check out thedailyapologist.com. I'm not one of the main content makers there, but I'm heavily involved with those guys and their mission. Definitely check them out for apologetics content. Really a lot of philosophical stuff and engaging with a lot of modern arguments that atheists propose. And also do the apologeticsreport.com, which is, if you're familiar with the Drudge Report, say the Drudge Report, but for apologetics, just a bunch of links that are updated, usually weekly. That you can get some fresh apologetics content. And I also do another podcast with my buddy Hiram, who's a preacher, and that's called God Magnified. It's part of the Light Network. You can search that wherever you listen to podcasts, God Magnified, Seeing God's Glory in Every Book, but don't want to talk about that too much because I'm on this podcast right now. But yeah, that's all I feel like doing a plug for right now.
That's great. I just started Family Team, and that is a resource for families. Primarily, we put out family devotionals. We do produce those about once a week, and so you can find our devotionals on Facebook. Just search Family Team, And then we also have a website, Family Team Youth Ministries, plural, Youth Ministries, FamilyTeamYouthMinistries.com. And you can find all of our content there. We're going to start a podcast as well and produce articles to encourage parents and kind of help them stay in the loop of pop culture and other things that they may need help learning about. Just trying to be a resource to families as much as possible. So be sure to check out all of our content and various places. We produce it so that it will help people like you. So be sure to check us out.
Yeah, real quick. You didn't say it, so I will. Like Family Team on Facebook if you can. They're posting pretty much family devotionals daily, which is really cool, especially with families being locked in. So if you have a family or you know somebody with a family, you want to start getting into the Family Devo game. Chris has been killing it lately, so make sure you check out Family Team on Facebook and the website as well. And I want to say, Cole's YouTube videos are both funny and instructional, which is a weird, not weird, but a unique and rare mix that Cole nails out of the park, which is really cool.
Well, thank you, Forrest.
Yes, very, very true on all accounts. Probably by the time that this podcast airs, we will no longer be producing devotionals daily. That was just a kind of a two-week thing for this first 2 weeks of quarantine, but we will definitely be producing them on a regular basis, at least weekly. But you may see us producing more often than that. So thank you for listening to Faith Football Friends. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your interest. We hope that you'll give a positive review on iTunes for this podcast or wherever it is that you listen to Faith Football Friends. Until next time.